This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, the political outsider who triumphed over a large field of experienced politicians in this year's primaries, formally accepted his party's presidential nomination last week.
Friends, delegates, and fellow Americans, I humbly and gratefully accept your nomination for the presidency of the United States.
Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Mr. Trump's acceptance speech, the longest since 1972, painted a dark picture of America at home and abroad, but he asserted that he, and he alone, could bring the country back from what he considered the brink of disaster.
Together, we will lead our party back to the White House, and we will lead our country back to safety, prosperity, and peace. We will be a country of generosity and warmth, but we will also be a country of law and order.
In addition to law and order, Mr. Trump echoed another staple theme that permeated the entire convention, that former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and the presumptive Democratic nominee was responsible for instability abroad as well as the rise of the so-called Islamic State.
After 15 years of wars in the Middle East, after trillions of dollars spent and thousands of lives lost, the situation is worse than it has ever been before. This is the legacy of Hillary Clinton: death, destruction, terrorism, and weakness. But Hillary Clinton's legacy does not have to be America's legacy.
That was Donald Trump, the Republican nominee for president, speaking on the final evening at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. In short, Mr. Trump promised to bring sweeping political change at home and abroad, to create wealth and to make America, quote, great and safe again. But if the main objective of the convention was to achieve party unity, a speech by arch-rival Senator Ted Cruz underscored the deep divisions that still remain in the party after a bruising primary. Senator Cruz gave a speech Wednesday night at the convention in which he did not endorse Mr. Trump, but rather urged Americans to go to the polls and vote their conscience in November, a statement which elicited boos from the hall.
If you love our country and love your children as much as I know that you do, stand and speak and vote your conscience. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom and to be faithful to the Constitution.
Senator Ted Cruz urged the delegates to vote their conscience. Well, there were several other moments which marred what was supposed to be a unifying event for Donald Trump. At the start of the convention, Donald Trump's wife, Melania, made a speech that stirred controversy after it was discovered that a section had been lifted from Michelle Obama's speech at the Democratic National Convention in 2008. Well, with us to reflect on what transpired at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland and to look forward to the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia next week, we turn to two distinguished political analysts who are no strangers to these microphones. John Fortier, he's a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, he's senior vice president for policy at Third Way, and that's a policy group based here in Washington. Both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, John Fortier, you've been to many Republican and probably Democratic conventions in your day. Talk about the atmospherics as well as the content, how this either compares or contrasts with conventions you've been at before.
Well, first, I'm glad to be here and part of the effort to make Encounter great again. It's always been great, Carol, so never needs rebooting. Look, it was not a typical convention, and Donald Trump is not a typical candidate. and it was a raucous convention in a way, and it had its stumbles. I guess if I step back and think about it from the perspective of Donald Trump, I don't think it was as unsuccessful a convention as some might say. For this reason, the people who are the elites in the party are still very divided about Donald Trump. You saw especially Ted Cruz getting up and essentially saying, you know, I'm not with you, and others not showing up at the convention. John Kasich not being with Donald Trump.
He's the governor of the state of Ohio?
Governor of Ohio, who ran for president against Donald Trump, and at one point it said he would support him, as did Ted Cruz. But the Republican voters seem to be coalescing around Trump. The polls are early, and I'm still very skeptical about polls until we get a month past the convention. But there isn't as big a divide among Republican voters as there is among the establishment. And when you saw Ted Cruz get up and essentially declare his independence from Donald Trump, you saw the hall boo. And I think you saw Republican voters in general sort of rally a bit behind Donald Trump. So, look, this is a person who is redefining the Republican Party in a number of ways which are really quite extraordinary on issues like trade, certainly much stronger on issues like immigration, reminding Republicans of older themes that Richard Nixon and others brought forward on law and order. These are things that haven't been at the forefront of people in the Republican Party. It's a change. It's a risk. I think it's hard to win over the long, long term with an increased white working class vote. But, you know, for this election, I think this is who Donald Trump is. I think he did a reasonably good job of picking Mike Pence for the vice president, had some ability to unify the party in that way. So crazy convention in many ways, but I do think that Donald Trump might not be too unhappy with the outcome, and we'll have to see what voters are going to say afterwards. But it's a new Republican Party, but one that Donald Trump has fashioned in his image a bit.
Well, for your take, Jim Kessler, how did you see the convention and what may result from it?
Wow, it was dark. I mean, it was really a dark convention, you know, in terms of mood. Yeah, it was raucous. You know, some of the highlights, Senator Ted Cruz coming out there and really kind of sticking a stiletto into the back of Donald Trump. I don't blame him. Donald Trump had labeled him a liar, said his father killed JFK, and that his wife was ugly. If Cruz had endorsed him, I think there would have been something wrong with Cruz. But he actually managed to make, for a brief moment, Donald Trump be a sympathetic figure, which is not very easy. In every convention, when you are the party out of power, you try and paint a dour picture of what's going on in the country and say that the country is in crisis and that the current political leadership is feckless and bad. So that's to be expected. But the level of the description of America as a dystopia was, I found, shocking. And I thought Donald Trump's speech, you know, he delivered it well. He does a very good job on stage, and I'll give him credit for that, and it could definitely whip up a fury. But it was the most negative acceptance speech I've ever heard in my life. It was the exact opposite of what Ronald Reagan did, both in 1976 when he was warning when he didn't get the nomination, and in 1980 when he accepted the nomination. And I don't think that darkness, I think it'll excite the base, the Republican base voter, but I don't think it's going to excite the middle.
Well, speaking of that, John Fortier, where does Donald Trump and the Republican Party go from here? Because if indeed it worked, at least partially at the convention, this kind of language, which we haven't gotten to yet, but we heard a lot of lock her up vis-a-vis Hillary Clinton, really portraying her, you know, as the Satan, as responsible for all the terrible things that have happened both abroad and here at home. So how is this going to work in the general election campaign?
Well, I think there is a real question. After the 2012 election, Republicans did what some people called an autopsy, looking at their party and saying for it to succeed in the future, it's going to need to expand into Hispanic voters and young voters and other growing groups in the electorate. And, you know, the problem with those kinds of diagnoses is you don't know who your nominee is going to be. And Donald Trump really is arguing for the opposite, is doubling down on the growth of the white voter and the white working class voter within the Republican Party that has been moving in that direction over the years. I'm not sure that's a very good long-term strategy, but I'm also not clear that it's an absolute electoral disaster for him. Again, I'm really skeptical about looking at the polls too much, too closely at this point, but it seems that he actually has Republican voters. He's certainly, his case that he's going to get some other voters, some Democrats, some independents who are or working class that might be attracted to him. I mean, really doubling strongly down on anti-trade. I felt like that was one of the strongest messages that doesn't usually come out of a Republican Party. This is a possibility for him. I guess I don't think it's likely that that will work for him, but I do think that, you know, there's a chance that he will get some of those voters. I think he's also going to lose some voters. But surprisingly, I think fewer from the actual voters than from the establishment. The establishment is still very divided about him. Lots of people really, you know, secretly hoping he will go down. The voters, I think, are more or less with him. So we'll have to see if this can work. It's a risky strategy and one that people feel uncomfortable about, but one that we'll have to see if it plays in November.
Jim Kessler, do you think Donald Trump and his campaign team have a strategy for the general election? Certainly, many of the things that went on during the convention, as we said, these refrains, lock her up vis-a-vis Hillary Clinton, you know, they're certainly unified. It appears even the more establishment Republicans, as well as the more grassroots or some of those Trump supporters, seem to be unified about their disdain for Hillary Clinton. But is that really enough?
Well, we're going to see. On the one hand, I think everyone who's underestimated Trump's abilities to attract votes has been proven wrong. So I think Trump is a threat, and I use that word threat, to win the presidency. I would not use that word if Marco Rubio or John Kasich was the nominee. I'd use another word for his chances of winning the presidency. And they do have a strategy, and their strategy is an us against them. And us are white and white working class people. And it's fueled by trying to make people who feel anxious instead feel angry and to be able to cast blame. And if you think that anger makes people better drivers, better spouses, and better coworkers, then you might think they make better voters. But my opinion is they don't make better anything. Will it work? We're going to see if it works. America, the demographic of the voter, is becoming every day slightly less white and slightly more minority. And there is a belief among the Trump team that they can still win some minority votes of Hispanics and African Americans who care about maybe his view of the economy or some version of law and order. That is a pipe dream. He will do as badly among African Americans as any Republican has, and he will set the record for how poorly he does among Hispanics. It's going to be tough. He's going to have to win somewhere close to 70% of white votes, and I think he'll have problems in the suburbs. I would say office park whites he'll have problems with.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier. He's a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard. He's senior vice president for policy at Third Way. We're discussing the recent Republican National Convention where Donald Trump became the official presidential nominee. We'll also be looking ahead to the Democratic National Convention. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a loyal fan from Kabul, Afghanistan, Sahar Sharbagh. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send us an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier, to talk about some of these contradictions on policies that have been very much associated with the Republican Party on trade, on our alliances with NATO allies, on which Donald Trump has pretty much bucked the tradition. How is he going to be able to reconcile these positions with the mainstream of the Republican Party?
Well, I do think one of the reasons his standing among some elites in the party is low is because he does cut against the traditional policy prescriptions in foreign policy, in even smaller government conservatism, social conservatism. There's always distrust that he is not quite with the party in all these ways. But I do think he has made this play for, you know, voters. The Republican Party has attracted over the years a lot of what we used to call Reagan Democrats and sort of Southern white Democrats, and has done a lot better with that vote over time. And it's not a surprise that the Republican Party is more worried about immigration. We've seen that come out in immigration debates, and he's much more forceful about it. The trade is somewhat new, although Republicans in Congress have been a little skeptical of the president's trade deals very recently, but it's showing that there's something there. So I think the elites feel a little bit threatened by him, that the voters that they thought were all with them, he won in places like Alabama and Massachusetts pretty well. He had a coalition of under-the-radar, non-elite people who are worried about trade, immigration, losing jobs, terrorism, and foreign policy. So it's a shift. Can he hold together this coalition? Is it the future of the party? I think the party is probably going to have debates within it from the more Donald Trump wing and from the more Paul Ryan or Marco Rubio wing, Ronald Reagan wing, whatever you'd like to call it, in the future. And I think they're going to have to sort those out. But I don't think the Republican Party can completely ignore the issues that Donald Trump has been bringing up in the future. And so it's going to be something of a mix between what they have been saying and this kind of growing group within their party.
Well, Jim Kessler, certainly we'll have to see if Donald Trump can fill the gap between rhetoric and actual deeds. He's promising a lot, and we really don't know what the concrete plans are for him to fulfill his promises. But the fact that there is so much chaos abroad, whether the rise of the Islamic State, the Syrian civil war, and so much instability, so many terror attacks, and then, of course, the police shootings here in the United States, unfortunately, this certainly does, in a sense, play into his hand.
It does. Look, he's selling himself as a strong man. What is the message to take out of the Trump campaign? And I'm sure they want law and order. But it's strength. I am strong. America's going to be strong. And, you know, Bill Clinton had famously said that in politics, it's better to be strong and wrong than right and weak. So the chaotic world helps him. The problem for him, though, on the other hand, is he has done so many crackpot things during the campaign, even during the convention. His tweets, before he even thought about running for president, or at least publicly mused about running for president, that there's a question, is he even fit to be commander-in-chief? And I think looking forward to the Democratic convention that's coming up, I think that'll be the theme that you'll hear from Democrats. Not that he's wrong for the country. That's what you would normally hear in conventions. Candidate X is wrong for the country. No, they will say he's unfit to be commander-in-chief. And they will point to dozens and dozens of other Republicans who said the exact same thing. So I think if the question that voters are going into the polls with in November is who could be strongest against terrorists, he may do okay. But who is fit to be commander-in-chief, that's a problem for him. And I think Democrats will make that a problem for him.
So, well, speaking of the Democrats, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with Jim's points generally. I was just going to bring up a couple of things that Trump did, both in his speech and generally, that other Republicans might not have, which are surprising in a way. I mean, certainly Donald Trump is a candidate who can more successfully disown the Iraq war. He can both. He's somebody who could say, look, whether it was exactly true or not, I was against the Iraq war, as well as being against all of the disastrous things that have happened in the region since the Obama administration, Hillary Clinton, took over. So I wipe my hands of both things, and I can come out where other candidates wouldn't have been able to do that, would have been much more committed or tied to it. The other thing is interesting, and I don't think this is going to be a major electoral shift for him, but Donald Trump was able to signal a greater Republican openness to gay rights, both by having some speakers, Peter Thiel, and also by mentioning that Islamic terrorism is not good and threatens the lifestyle of LGBTQ people, and said that at a Republican convention. So it's, you know, he has an interesting mix. I agree he's threatening the party in many ways, but in a couple of ways he's somewhat moderated the party's positions and perhaps has the ability to appeal to some voters who are not overtly religious, who are not typical Republican voters, and those two issues add to that.
Some people might say by saying these things, he's in a sense pandering. We don't really know if he believes in some of those statements, but I guess we'll wait and see. But back to you, Jim Kessler, looking toward the Democratic National Convention. I think Ted Cruz gave Hillary Clinton a good campaign ad. He said in his speech, which was, of course, you know, much booed at the convention, that he implored Republicans to vote your conscience. So I can see Hillary Clinton making a nice campaign ad out of that.
It's a target-rich environment out there. Yeah, Ted Cruz gave the greatest and worst speech of his life. The fascinating thing in watching it, I wasn't in the hall, I watched it on television, but being booed for saying vote your conscience is kind of an extraordinary thing. You can go down the line and you could run every single day from now till November an ad featuring a new prominent Republican saying horrible things about Donald Trump and his fitness to be commander-in-chief. You could run an ad every day and choose a different elected Republican office holder or former office holder. And I think you're going to be seeing that. And I agree with John. I think there's this split between the elites and
the base
population of Republican voters. An elite is never a good term, but there is a group of suburban women who have been voting Republican. They voted for Mitt Romney in the last election, that I think are going to have a hard time voting for him this time. And if you're not doing well in the suburbs, as a Republican, you're doomed. So this race is probably going to be decided in suburban areas. Both candidates have work to do there, but I think this convention shows that Trump's going to have a lot more work to do.
And I would just add that the calculus is right. If there are some Trump voters who are not typical to be gained, what's left of the conservative Democrats and white working class vote that's not voting in the Republican Party, there's also parts of the coalition to be lost. And you know, I point to, Carol, your home state of Pennsylvania. A lot of people point to that and say, well, could Donald Trump do better there? And certainly Donald Trump could do very well in parts of the state, in most of the central and western part of the state, where he might actually outdo typical Republicans. But then if you look at the Philadelphia suburbs and Philadelphia area, he may lose part of his coalition. So it's a hard math to add up. But you know, that's what he's counting on, that what he gains in additional voters will outweigh what he loses in the coalition.
And of course, he's talking about bringing back manufacturing, bringing back coal, bringing back steel. And while this may be seductive for some who've lost their jobs, it's really not realistic in this very globalized society in which we live. It seems going backwards. I'm personally concerned about that kind of rhetoric, because while we have to be sympathetic with people who have lost their jobs in many sectors, I think the answer is probably not going backwards, but how can we retrain workers? But we will see. And that leads me to the Democratic National Convention quickly before we close. So, John Fortier, you have Donald Trump appealing to, interestingly, supporters of Bernie Sanders, who has now endorsed Hillary Clinton. Certainly, they converge on certain issues. He's against trade deals. He sees them as bad, as does Donald Trump. He talks about a rigged system. So looking forward to the Democratic National Convention, how do you think the Democrats, Hillary Clinton in particular, who was vilified, and that's an understatement, at the Republican National Convention, how will she and the Democrats go forward to combat these kinds of attacks?
Well, I think the unifying of the Democratic Party will happen more as it does naturally. Bernie Sanders will not make a speech where he says, vote your conscience. He's already endorsed Hillary Clinton. The Bernie Sanders voters, I think, will come along, whether it takes a few weeks or a month, to let it settle in that their guy's not the candidate and that Donald Trump is actually a much worse option for them than Hillary Clinton. So I don't think the Bernie Sanders voters ever were so different than typical voters who would have been coming from the progressive side of the aisle. No, I mean, Donald Trump really did double down on trade. He's been making that point along the way. But the last night's speech, I thought that was the one that was just the strongest case against trade that I've heard from any Republican. Perhaps that's a hope for some of the Bernie Sanders voters, but I think most of them are solid Clinton voters. And unifying the party is not going to be overly difficult for Hillary Clinton.
Well, the last word to you, Jim Kessler, about these different contradictions and how the Democrats, in particular Hillary Clinton, who was, as I said, vilified. The Republican delegates said many times these chants, lock her up. You know, she's a criminal. How is she going to deal with that? And Bernie Sanders as well. How will he come to the rescue? How do you see it?
Bernie Sanders is not going to give a Ted Cruz-like speech. He will give a speech where he'll fire up supporters. Everything will be fine. The moment, frankly, that Elizabeth Warren stood with Hillary Clinton last month, the Bernie Sanders movement died. So the Democratic Party is unified already. And if they weren't unified a week ago after the Republican convention, they're certainly unified. This is going to be the most negative campaign in history. Both candidates don't have high favorables and both have high negatives. And the truth is, they're going to be making a case against the other mostly. Also, just the way our campaign finance system works, where you have super PACs that can take unlimited amounts of money from wealthy donors and spend it. They spend all their money on negative ads. That's what super PACs do. So for the people in swing states, I feel so sorry for what you're about to hear of the onslaught of negative advertising for the next 4 months, but that's what you're going to see.
All right. On that note, please be sure to tune in to VOA coverage for the Democratic National Convention next week in Philadelphia. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, John Fortier. He's political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. And Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. Thanks so much for your terrific insights. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was John Dryden. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.